And welcome back in Game Day, SportsRadio.com, Tuesday morning, September 25th. Boji Wood coming to you live from the Game Day, SportsRadio.com studios right here south of Atlanta, Georgia. Got Mike Bernard with us from OTM Sports out in Vegas. We're going to talk a little NFL action from this past weekend. Mike, it's Tuesday morning, and I know you were traveling yesterday. Have you kind of settled in for the week now?
Yes, I'm back in the dungeon, so to speak. So I'm in my comfort zone, and we had some good games over the weekend, both college. But today we're going to recap NFL, and pretty good one last night.
Yeah, it was a good one last night. But let's jump back to Sunday right now. Over here in Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, the Saints and the Falcons went at it. 43-37 Saints in overtime versus the Dirty Birds. And, you know, there was – I was kind of surprised at this game. I really thought the Falcons would take the Saints.
Well, Coach, what did the point spread tell us?
I know you tell me that, and I know that when you tell me, but I'm not smart enough to recognize that. So you have to keep reminding me. But, yeah, you were dead on it.
Well, look, I can't take credit for what the point spread said, but here's the thing. And people ask me all the time, well, why is the point spread like that? And honestly, I looked into it because, remember, the Falcons were favored by 5 or 6 points at home over the Panthers. So then the Saints come to town, they open 4, and they drop to 3 and then to 2. And I couldn't find injuries, any other intangibles. I just say, okay, the point spread says the Saints are going to win. And they won the game and covered, of course. And the game went well over the total, of course. They scored 80 points.
Well, as far as going over, someone that went over, Drew Brees, he broke the NFL record for career completions in that game. 6,301 completions, passing Brett Favre. I mean, that is a ton of caught passes. And, you know, and how many did he have dropped over those 6,000? But, you know, next up for him is going to be the yardage record. And I have no doubt that, you know, he's gonna, unless something catastrophic happens, he's going to get it. I don't think he'll get it this week because I still think he needs right at 400 or what have you. But he'll pass Brett Favre, and then I think the schedule lays out. He'll break the record at, again, if all goes as planned, he'll break the record at home versus Washington, and that record is held by Peyton Manning. And, Mike, 71,523, that's what he needs to break the record. I mean, throwing for 71,000 yards, that is unbelievable.
It really is, and he's not like Big Ben or Tom Brady, these 6'5 imposing figures. I mean, he's a 6 foot quarterback, and maybe even slightly under 6 foot. And you've got one new player that's been compared to him, of course, and that's Baker Mayfield. Well, Drew Brees, and I don't believe him, but showing the class act that he is, he said that Baker Mayfield could be better than him.
Yeah, and again, that's just the type guy he is. Going to his height, listen, I'm 5'11". And I'm probably, and as I've gotten older, I've probably maybe shrunk, you know, a little bit. But back in 2005, I had the chance to spend a little bit of time with Drew Brees in Birmingham. And I can tell you right now, he's not 6 feet. He is. There's no way that if he's 6 feet, then I'm 6 feet, and I'm not 6 feet. I'm just telling you. But going back to the game, Alabama rookie Calvin Ridley had his, you know, caught 3 TDs, and he is the first rookie wide receiver to catch 3 TDs in a game since Odell Beckham Jr. did it back in 2014. And as we go on through some of these other games, Mike, we're going to be talking about some individual performances, and not surprisingly, a lot of these superlative performances from this past week, they came from SEC guys. That doesn't surprise you, does it?
No, it doesn't. And if we just let's take a look, and I'm going off the top of my head, but we know that LSU has the most players in the league, and that Alabama and Florida, now give or take, of course, there's practice squad kids, players, not kids, and you have players that get cut and re-signed and so forth. But heading into the season, LSU had the most. Alabama, USC, and Florida were all right around tied for second. So three of the four schools with the most players are from the league, the SEC.
All right, Kansas City, 38, San Francisco, 27. Chiefs, they've scored a touchdown in each of their first five drives. And rare to see that anywhere, but especially in the NFL. You know, when you look at the Niners' point of view from this game, yeah, they lost the game. They may have lost much more. Jimmy Garoppolo looks like, you know, he's going to be out with torn ACL. I mean, that's catastrophic for the San Francisco 49ers.
It really is. And remember last year, they didn't have – they might have had one win, or it might have been winless. I don't recall. But he came in and won his last five as the starter. As for the Chiefs scoring a touchdown in their first five drives of last week, that is very rare. I mean, you don't ever see that. The only time I see that is if I have the under in a game.
Well, listen, when we look at this situation with San Francisco, again, they put all their eggs in Garoppolo's basket, so to speak. I mean, where did they go from here?
Well, C.J. Beathard, he's the backup. He's expected to get the start, but I don't think they have confidence in him because everything I read say they bring in Tom Savage for a workout. I just don't think they have confidence in Beathard, even as just being a serviceable quarterback.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you, and they're going to have to, and I don't really think Tom Savage is going to be the answer either. They're going to have to keep looking. They're going to have to. They're going to have to find someone. You know, maybe Kaepernick could get a chance to go back to San Francisco. Who knows? All right, Sunday night game, Detroit 26, New England 10. Am I reading that correctly? I mean, come on now. I mean, this was the master versus the pupil. Listen, I watched this game from start to finish. Detroit, they just played better than the Patriots.
You're right, Coach. And the Lions were getting 7 points. They won outright by 16. The game stayed well under the 54 to 55 point total. And speaking of SEC, two SEC players did very well, including Kerryon Johnson.
Well, listen, I think three SEC players did pretty well.
That's right. Left out the quarterback there.
Yeah, Matthew Stafford, he threw for three touchdowns. You know, Matt Patricia, now he gets his first win over his former boss, Bill Belichick. And you and I kind of talked about this off the air last week. We may have mentioned it on the air too, but about, you know, the old master versus pupil deal. And, like, I think Nick Saban, I don't think he's ever lost to one of his former assistants or what have you. You know,
He's
13-0. I remember Coach Bryan. I think maybe he lost like two or three, you know, over the course of 25 years at Alabama. I think he may have lost two or three. I know he lost to Coach Stallings in the Cotton Bowl back in 68, I believe, or 67 or 68. I know he lost to Charlie McClendon one time. May have just been two. But, again, you know, you have those situations where, you know, the master wins the vast majority of the games. And I would have thought just, you know, that, yeah, well, Belichick's the same way. But, no, with Patricia's win, this makes 11 wins for Belichick and 9 losses versus former assistant coaches. And not that that means a whole lot, but it just was a surprising number for me. But a couple of other players from the SEC, as you mentioned, Kerryon Johnson, the running back from Auburn, he was the first Lions back to rush for over 100 yards since Reggie Bush did it back in Thanksgiving Day in 2013. And, Mike, I don't know if you saw it. It was almost like a mini celebration over on the sideline, and the fans actually recognized that they had a runner go over 100 yards for the first time in seems like forever. And it was a big deal. And then you take into Sony Michel, the Georgia graduate. He chipped in 50 yards on the ground. When you look at that running game that the Lions have, I think they've got some solid players back there. LeGarrette Blount, who was a big contributor for the Patriots just a few years ago, you know, they used him more as a decoy than anything else.
They did, and not only did the fans recognize getting the 100-yard rusher, the players were all over there slapping fives. They knew it. I'm sure it showed up on the Jumbotron, but still, it was a celebration. But, Coach, talking about Belichick and his record, that is very surprising to me because, look, he doesn't have many losses. And to have that many losses against his proteges or former pupils, that is surprising to me.
It is me, too, and also, the college game and the pro game, they're totally different animals because, again, you're buying and trading. It's almost like commodities in the NFL. In college, you know, you're recruiting, you're gathering talent. Nobody else can come in and make deals. You know, nobody's saying, you know, well, you know, hey, after my sophomore year, I'm going to go negotiate a better deal with Nebraska or USC, you know, or whomever. But, of course, with the new transfer rule, we might be getting to something like that.
We're getting close to that, Coach, because we have players that are, you know, and look, I don't have an issue with it, to be honest. I know it makes it tougher on the head coaches, but – you know, we have players that are saying, okay, if I've only played four games, here are my options. So you're right.
Yeah, and we're going to talk more about that as the week goes on. But getting back to this game, you know, Detroit, you know, I think, you know, I don't want to say that they're finding their groove or what have you, but New England, a high-scoring offense, Tom Brady, you know, could be the greatest of all time. I mean, when you look at the number of Super Bowls and what he's accomplished, it's hard to argue. But this Detroit defense that held New England to 10 points, and I didn't see a lot of mistakes by the New England offense. You know, I don't think they played sloppily or anything throughout the game. But Detroit allowed 48 points in week one and 30 points in week two. So, I mean, you know, the defense seems to be getting a foothold on what they're capable of doing.
Right. It certainly looked to be the case Sunday night, holding the Patriots to 10. But, listen, that's the NFL. Teams are rarely as good or as bad as they look in previous weeks. That's the case here. You pointed out they gave up 78 points in the first 2 weeks. They hold the Patriots to 10. I will say this. The Patriots really struggled at Jacksonville, but that's, you know, not a big deal because Jacksonville is a very solid defense. And we'll see. I think the Patriots, they're off to a 1-2 start. But I think their whole offense will change when they get Edelman back because right now, Coach, as a former defensive coordinator, you've got to notice that they're just doubling Gronk and they don't have to worry about Edelman underneath.
Gronk is the first choice for Brady. I mean, it seems like every progression starts with Gronk. And as you said, when you don't have Edelman to take that pressure off of him, and listen, the very worst cornerbacks in the NFL are great cover guys. I'm just telling you right now, the very worst in the NFL are great cover guys. And you cannot allow your star receiver to be bracketed or double coverage, whatever terminology you want to use, you can't allow him to be taken out of every play without someone that can take the pressure off of him and give the quarterback a reliable receiver and a second go-to guy. And as you said, you know, Gronk is the man. And as long as the Patriots don't have another receiver that can put pressure on the defense, Gronk's going to get bracketed every single time. And, again, New England's offense always starts first look at Gronk. It's over at that point.
Yeah, and the like you say, the other receivers aren't garnering any respect from the defense, and even Gronk being 6'7", where you can throw it up, it's not the same, because think back to when Edelman's in the game and they had other capable receivers that the defense had to pay attention to. Gronk sometimes will be running in the middle of the field open. Now he's never open.
Never. Detroit's got to go on the road to Dallas. And, again, the Cowboys obviously are struggling. But you mentioned that the Cowboys are actually expected to be favored in this game?
Yeah, Coach, they're favored by 3, which is basically saying Dallas and Detroit are even, and Cowboys get 3 points for home field. But Cowboys, they don't look very good. In Detroit, we'll see if they can validate this Sunday night win. Patriots, they go home next week. They're playing the Dolphins. Miami's unbeaten. But Patriots opened as a 7-point favorite. They were a 7-point favorite in Detroit and lost, but they're a 7-point favorite at home. We'll see how they fare there.
I, for one, did not see the Dolphins sitting at 3-0 right now. I'll have to say that. Last night's game, Pittsburgh 30, Tampa Bay 27. The Fitzpatrick magic came to an end last night. Some very untimely turnovers in the first half. It doomed them. We kind of all knew this was coming sooner or later. But as far as the game goes, you know, the Steelers, they played more than well enough to win, and a good amount of points scored in this game.
Absolutely. Steelers win. They cover. The game goes over the 54 points. And it really wasn't that close, because the Steelers led 30-10 at half.
Yeah, I actually – full disclosure here, when it was 30-13 late in the third quarter, I started watching a movie. I'll just be quite frank with you. But now, and again, before we throw Fitzpatrick under the bus or anything, you know, let's acknowledge that he became the first NFL quarterback in history, not since somebody, but the very first in history, to throw for 400-plus yards in 3 consecutive games. However, the 3 picks, you know, it doomed him. Big Ben, he looked like the Big Ben of old. He was 30 of 38, 353 yards and 3 touchdowns. But more impressive to me was there were times when on third down when they needed to convert, and he found a window about the size of a porthole and put the ball exactly where it needed to be. There was great coverage on the play. But, I mean, he was just on fire last night.
Yeah, he looked great. And as far as Fitzpatrick, that the record that he holds now, think of all the quarterbacks that used to sling it around. Dan Fouts, Dan Marino. Philip Rivers had. I mean, no one has ever done that. That's amazing. And of course, Fitzpatrick is a career backup.
Yeah. Again, we know he's a journeyman. One thing about this situation, and again, DeSean Jackson said last week, said, hey, we got to go with a hot hand. You know, if we're winning, you know, even when Winston comes back, Fitzpatrick has got to be the man. And again, he's a very likable guy. He knows his place on the team. He contributes where he needs to contribute. But from Jameis Winston being able to come back to work today after serving that suspension for the first 3 weeks, really, the Bucs couldn't have hoped for a better script from that standpoint.
Yeah, and from what I can tell, and the few people I've talked to that are in the know, I think that Fitzpatrick really commands the locker room more than Jameis Winston, because Jameis had disappointed a lot of his teammates with continuous behavior that's detrimental to himself and to the team. So it could be a divisive situation in that locker room. But right now, from what I can tell, is Fitzpatrick is the leader.
Yeah, I can agree that. I can see that. Obviously, when you just put them side to side, talent to talent, you know that Jameis Winston's an unbelievable physical talent. If that young man can get his head on straight and put his off-field shenanigans behind him and become a true professional, the sky's the limit for him. But right now, he's just going to he's going to be average at best.
Yeah, and, you know, not to be too critical of the guy, but I'm going to say it. When people show you who they are, you believe them. And he's shown time and time again he makes the same mistakes over and over again. And I think his teammates might give him one more chance, and that's about it.
Let me ask you, were you surprised last night? Again, the turnovers really hurt the Bucs getting out of the box and everything. But the Steelers were up, you know, 30-10 at the half. And they really didn't, you know, it wasn't, to me, it wasn't like that they were actually trying to push the ball down the field, because they didn't score a point in the second half. It looked to me like they were more trying to just establish the run game and run the ball more in the second half. To me, that's just what it looked like.
Right. And that's really common in the NFL. Teams get up, and that's why it's so hard to handicap NFL games with the point spread, because at halftime, the winner of who's ever leading and covering at halftime is about 50% of who's going to cover the game at the end. Because the Steelers, to me, I look like they were trying to run the clock out. They wanted to limit Fitzpatrick's throws and chances on the field. They didn't score a point in the second half. They still get the win. But you're right about the rushing game, because remember, I pointed out in week two, the Steelers only rushed for 33 yards on the ground, and that's abysmal. But they ran for 78 Monday night, and the difference was the plus three in turnover margin. Those getting that big lead, and then Tampa Bay just couldn't overcome it.
Yeah, and I, again, being a former college coach, I feel very confident in saying this, and I don't feel bad about hurting anybody's feelings. There's one thing that the NFL coaches do so much better than college coaches, and you alluded to it there in a way. It's clock management, game management. They do such a better job than college coaches, it's not even funny, because, you know, once you get a lead, then in the NFL, we're going to make sure that we protect that lead and do things. And we look not at this possession, but we look at three, four possessions down the road. And I think it was 1994. LSU has a 3 or 4 touchdown lead at Auburn. And Curly Hallman was the head coach at LSU at the time. And for some reason, with Tommy Hodson at quarterback, they keep throwing the ball for whatever reason. And Auburn intercepts three passes, or maybe four. I know it was at least three, maybe four passes, and returned every single one of them for a touchdown.
Yeah, and speaking of the coaches that know how to end a game and how to manage it, Mike Tomlin is one of the best, if not the best. I remember, Coach, this is when the Browns, I know the Browns are bad now or coming into this season, but maybe 5-10 years ago, it was a Monday night game. The Steelers were laying 10 on Monday night. So the Browns were, you know, not doing well. But Mike Tomlin had his running back fall down, and he managed the clock. He didn't care about winning by, I know this because I had the Browns plus 10, and they were leading by 6 or 7, and I didn't want the Steelers to score. Well, he managed that clock perfectly. He knew exactly when to, he ran it down to zero, and the Steeler fans were like, oh, boo, go ahead and score. But the only way the Steelers could have lost that game were to kick a field goal, and then the Browns somehow miraculously score 2 touchdowns. But why take the chance? So that's why I like Mike Tomlin, because he plays the odds and percentages. We beat up on the coaches last week, Coach, in college football. So many of them, they don't know how to end a game.
You're right there. You'll get no argument from me on that whatsoever. Well, speaking of running down to zero, Mike, this segment is about over. We've got to break here. But want to thank you for your time this Tuesday morning, and we'll look forward to having you back. We'll do. Are we doing Thursday this week? A little inside.
I think we should. Yeah. It's Vikings at Rams. I know the Vikings had a tough day Sunday, but they're still two good teams. That's a primetime game Thursday night.
Yeah, and also let's look at that college game for Thursday night. The Miami game, is it North Carolina and Miami?
It is. Carolina's coming off the nice win over Pitt. And I don't know what's going on with Miami. I saw there was a quarterback change. Do you know anything about that?
Not really. I've heard some scuttlebutt about it, but not enough for me to really comment on it. Listen, I think I think he's going to do a good job at Miami. He's already done a good job at Miami. They're a totally different program than they were before he got there. There's no doubt that you know, he'll get that thing steered right. And when I say steered right, I really believe that he'll be able to get them back competing for a chance to go to the playoffs down the line. Once they get, you know, a few more recruiting years in and really establish that program, get their facilities built up, which they're doing right now. But, you know, that being said, you know, they're not where they need to be yet.
No, but they did win the Coastal Division last year. And that's an improvement because they hadn't been. I think that was the first time Miami had ever been to the championship game. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is very correct. So, all right, well, Mike, we're going to break it off here, and we look forward to visiting with you again on Thursday and then on Friday on Inside the Numbers.
Right. Two national games, Ohio State at Penn State, Stanford at Notre Dame.
All right. We'll be right back. Game Day, sportsradio.com.